This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So, you almost could make it up, right? But not quite.
You could make it up and then nobody could believe you.
Yeah, you would say, oh, yeah, this is... Everyone's like, you're making it up. Shut up. So, remember that RV we talked about yesterday? Parked in front of the home of Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold? Her West Seattle home, not her North Bend home. It turns out it was there coincidentally. It wasn't there as part of a political protest. It is someone's choice to put their car there, the RV there, not realizing exactly where it was, not realizing that there was a bigger story going on over the course of the last few days. It was just a coincidence. This is the latest update in what is maybe the most bizarre story of the year.
I still can't believe it.
It's very weird.
It's ridiculous.
Let's talk about the context before we talk about why this is so weird. So a couple days ago, maybe 3 days ago, a local businessman and a community activist, Ari Hoffman, friend of the show, he's been on many, many times, like Ari, good dude. He said, look, hey city, I'm going to tow these derelict RVs that are occupied by homeless people, parked illegally. I'm going to tow them to my personal council members, the one that represents where I live. He lives in Georgetown. And where I have a cemetery that I'm on the board of, which is in North Seattle. Okay? So if you don't change the sort of urgency in reviewing these issues, okay, fine. I'm going to tow the derelict RVs to your homes. So the city took notice because we were talking about it, because it was getting a lot of play online. And they did, in fact, move the trucks, or at least get the folks who were operating them, occupying them, to move them. Okay, that's good. Then yesterday, it's Yom Kippur. Ari Hoffman is an Orthodox Jew, so he was doing nothing but worship yesterday. At the same time, an RV was parked in front of Lisa Herbold's home, which, by the way, interesting to note, or important to note, not a council member that was part of the conversations from Ari Hoffman, because she's from West Seattle and he doesn't live there. So someone left the RV in front. Now, I saw the first instance of this sort of in left-wing Twitter world, like progressive Seattle Twitter, saying, hey, someone did this, and they were wondering who did it, and lots of people baselessly blamed Ari Hoffman for doing it, because when you're a Jew in Seattle, they don't really care about your issues and care about some of your religious beliefs. And so we just are always blamed for stuff. So it wasn't Ari. But a lot of folks were all like, myself included, there's no way that this would be coincidental. There was no one out there who thought on either side of the issue, no one actually thought it would have been a coincidence. Everyone thought that it was a political move. So it was vandalized briefly with someone putting some spray paint on the side.
Beautiful spray paint, by the way.
Okay, stop. He doesn't work on this station. You don't need to suck up to Dory. I'm kidding.
I like Dory. He actually sits in the same room as me when I'm doing my work.
Yeah, you know why?
Why is that?
Because you bother me and I don't want to be around you. But okay, so someone put Dory for governor on the side of the thing and people were outraged. Turns out they were right to be outraged, at least in part, because there was an actual owner who is a pregnant woman, pregnant mom, who isn't homeless in a traditional sense, but it was expecting to live in that RV to try to sort of save enough money to get back on the path to being in a more traditional house or apartment. So she shows up and she's all like, what happened? This is someone who said she doesn't have access to the internet, so she's not really paying attention to some of the news. So for her, she had no clue as to what went down, but to everybody else, they were like, oh, okay. Our bad. She was actually on with Dory Monson from our sister station, Cairo Radio, and she pointed out why she had parked where she parked.
We were actually going to park the trailer on the corner by the grocery mart down the street a few blocks, but down the street a few blocks is the bad neighborhood of West Seattle.
Okay.
And me and my boyfriend thought that was a bad idea, so we called Robert in the other car, and we said, hey, we should park it somewhere else. But we were also running out of time for the U-Haul to go back to its actual, like, owners of the U-Haul.
So what I find still most interesting about this story is what we talked about yesterday. You had a whole bunch of people who were outraged that this happened, that they had claimed that this is harassment. Lisa Herbold, the council member, she's being terrorized. I can't believe, who would do such a thing? And it was interesting because I'm not entirely sure I understand. Let's say it was a political stunt to move this RV in front of Lisa Herbold's home. Why is that terrorizing Lisa Herbold? Why would there be any claims of harassment or terror or outrage at all if you've been saying over and over and over again, blue check marks on Twitter who are progressive Seattleites, you said there's no problem whatsoever with these RVs. You said to all of us who complain about it, get over it. These are human beings. Where's your compassion? This is all they have. Leave them be. How dare you? And yet, when it's put in front of Lisa Herbold's house, they betray their true feelings. They're the actual NIMBYs. They love to say, not in my backyard is NIMBY. They'll call people out. When you say, if you're a parent and you don't want a dangerous encampment across the street from your home or at the park that you take your kids to, you are called out as a NIMBY. They throw it out there. They say you lack compassion. You're a bad person. You're an awful human being. These are just human beings just like you. These are your friends, your family members, your neighbors. That's how you treat them, like animals. And then when it happens to them, they scream out really, really loud. And they were so ticked off today that this woman, Breyer is her name, doesn't consider herself a victim in all of this. She was actually seemed to have a good time in the interview. She seemed to think a lot of this was funny, specifically being the quote-unquote victim of spray paint.
I do like how on the side of our camper it says Vote Dory, and the person that graffitied it, it looks really nice. I might have to keep it. That's all I
can say. Turns out she doesn't view herself as a victim, and oh my gosh, because we live in Seattle with this victim culture in sort of full display on Twitter. A lot of blue check marks on Twitter, upset with Dory, upset with this woman, literally upset that she's not mad at what happened yesterday. Because you see, when you get in the way of a narrative that the left wants to push, oh my gosh, they don't care. They take no prisoners. They will go after anyone, including this woman. They are disgusted that they can't use this woman for their own political agenda. And the people who complain the most about how evil all the conservatives are, they're not having a good day today. They're not excited about Breyer speaking out, because you know what? Before they realized who she was and they had just heard she's 10 months pregnant or 10 weeks pregnant, she is homeless, they were all like, see, how dare you? You just ruined this poor woman's life. Let's raise money for her. This is a poor woman who's under attack because of the evil right wingers of Seattle. And then she comes out and she's like, I'm not a victim. They're not happy on Twitter today. They're not happy at all.
You know who is happy? Breyer. She's fine.
She's
doing great.
Fine in all of this. And you know what? Should she have had to go through this? No, of course not. Of course not. No one's happy that it happened. Because the truth of the matter is, while they might have laughed at the whole situation, which again is weird, right? It's doesn't happen every day. People understood that the reason why everyone immediately went to this idea of a political statement is because we have gotten to the point in this city where we're ready to break. We're about to break. There are so many people out in the Seattle area and the surrounding areas impacted by homelessness. And they're not being heard by this council. They're not being heard by this council at all. And just our friend Mark Kastner, who is the editor or managing editor of, what is it, Sounder at Heart?
Yeah.
This dude, someone had sent me a tweet with him attacking me and Dory. And by the way, I love how I got attacked for this. I literally had nothing to do with it. But he goes, it's cool that Jason Rantz, Dory Munson, and their radio station encourages people to steal a pregnant woman's RV trailer. So that's interesting. An RV trailer was not stolen. What ended up happening with that trailer, with the RV, happened before I even went on the air, and yet somehow I'm to blame for the delusion in this person's head. And so we called it out, because I don't like getting trolled on Twitter. I have to block people like this, because they spend most of their day just attacking me on Twitter, and it's just, it's boring. It's I don't want that kind of negativity in my life. So the guy goes online on Twitter and says, "You should unblock me. Let's have a conversation." So I actually did something that I thought was one step better. I invited him on the show, or you invited him on the show.
I did.
How'd that go?
It didn't go well. He said no.
What else he say?
He called you a monster.
Oh, yeah. He kind of harassed you a little bit. Just a little bit. I noticed that he had posted a screenshot of your Twitter conversation. He has taken it down. So maybe he did? Yeah, he did. That's why I knew he sent you a message. He posted it. I don't know if he took it down because he didn't want the lunatics that follow him to start harassing you on Twitter, or he wants to be able to claim that I don't want to engage in a conversation with him because I disagree. I don't want to engage with you on Twitter because I don't engage with Twitter trolls. But if you want to come on the show, I'll happily have a debate with you.
I thought it would have been a cool interview.
It could have been. I mean, he probably would have said things that were just annoying, and I'd have to pot him down just a little bit so I can speak. Because there's a little level of, like, unhinged anger there that makes me a little bit concerned, but it could have been good radio.
Yeah, people don't like you.
Okay, people like me plenty.
Yeah.
Look at this text message from the 253. Jason rants, I hate... Oh.
Yeah. I could have told you that the text line didn't like you, but I figured you knew that. They like me, though.
425 called me a Grinch.
It's now the Peyton Barron Show.
Oh, see there. Now all the nice text messages are coming in. I love you, Jason.
Those are pity.
Oh, someone called me Detective Rance. Just throwing that out there. Just saying.
Those are pity. They want you to be happy.
253, you're amazing, Jason. Got a lot of support in the 253. 360, Jason's awesome, even when he's mean. See? Shut up and push the button. Like that. Yeah, push the button.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So, Sean Scott is a Seattle City Council candidate. He's a socialist running in District Number 4. Now, District Number 4 is where this studio is located. It's about East Lake, Wallingford, the U District, Roosevelt, Northeast Seattle. Sean Scott holds very fringe views on virtually everything. Virtually everything, he holds a very fringe view, and even fringe by Seattle standards. So he took part in the Seattle Police Officers Guild Police Forum last night. I've actually got video of it. If you haven't seen it, it's on our Facebook page. And it was his opportunity to brag about how dangerously and viciously anti-cop he is. And he showed up at that event yesterday because he wanted to brag to his fringe supporters about how tough he is going into the evil forum surrounded by racist cops and tell them off to their faces. It's all an act, of course. I mean, he believes what he says. That part's not an act. This is an act because he purposefully keeps this tone that's unlike the tone of Shama Sawant, whose tone matches the crazy rhetoric that comes out of her mouth. He doesn't do it. It's actually a really smart strategy. He doesn't have a tone that matches the crazy positions. He stays calm the entire time because he wants to fool people into thinking his positions are reasonable or thoughtful. They are not. And every single time he spoke, the craziness was on display. So he said that he's a cop abolitionist. And Brandi Cruz over at Q13, my good friend, she was the moderator, and she was like, wait, okay, so explain what that actually means.
The reference point, and I think the best and most clear definition for what police abolition means, was set forward in a book written by Michelle Alexander called The New Jim Crow.
The New Jim Crow. So remember, what he's about to set up is a book that believes that basic laws, as they're being doled out by the SPD, the punishment for breaking laws when you get arrested, is the equivalent of new Jim Crow style laws. Listen to this.
Where she described the lengths that The current prison industrial complex and the rise of for-profit prisons, and in many cities, an apparatus of over-aggressive and racist policing that has emerged to sort of steer many black and brown bodies back into, in essence, a form of slavery that was excused by the 13th Amendment, very clearly making a stipulation saying that slavery was outlawed except as punishment for a crime. So police abolition, succinctly, is about severing the link between contemporary policing and historical racism.
So he wants to pretend a situation exists that doesn't. He believes that all cops are racist, that have some kind of bias in them. And specifically, it's a bias against African-Americans and Latinos. That's what he actually believes. Listen to this.
Okay, so it doesn't mean no police.
I take a lot of inspiration from a book written by Alex Vitale called...
And by the way, I love when you throw out, I take a lot of inspiration from these books. You see, I'm a learned man. I am someone who is thoughtful. I'm well-read. I'm well-researched. But when you take that kind of stuff out and you just focus on the words that are coming out of his mouth, he's not well-researched. He's not thought out. He's not thoughtful. He's not reasonable. He's taking hateful positions, but he's masking it in this tone.
The end of policing. And so some people want to say that what I'm actually talking about is the end of racist policing as currently constructed, or some...
As currently constructed, meaning right now, police officers in Seattle, and presumably he believes this in Everett and Bellevue and Tacoma and all across the state, you are racist by design because of how the current construct of policing exists.
Something else, that's literally what I mean by it. It's not theoretical. It's literally about ending racism in policing. And so if people think that that is actually not possible, I think that says more about the current imagination around policing than it does about my position.
No. See, excuse me, sir. With all due respect, this says nothing of our view, because we don't believe that we have a racist police force. You do. And that says more about you than it does about us. Because I believe, as do most people who are listening to my voice right now on this show, 99.999% of cops who decide to put on a uniform every single day, knowing that it may be the last time that they see their family members, their kids, their spouse, as they go into the office, as they go onto the streets, protecting us from bad elements, we know that they are good people, hardworking people. We also acknowledge that there are some folks who are cops who aren't very good at their job. The same way there are some folks who aren't very good at politicking or teaching or lawyering. Every single industry has some bad apples. We believe, normal people believe, reasonable, thoughtful people believe, that the majority of cops are good. You believe the opposite. And that was put on display when he was asked very directly, do you believe all police in Seattle police with a bias?
I would say yes. I would say also, so yes, I think it's also the case that there are some officers that are in areas of town where bias policing might result in the loss of life, the escalation of conflict where it need not be escalated. And there might be some other areas of town where bias policing might not have consequences that are as deadly.
He wants you to believe that when you put a cop in front of someone who's black or brown, that cop is going to shoot that person. That's what he wants you to believe. Now, despite data clearly saying that that does not happen the way he wants you to believe, he holds that belief because he's virulently anti-cop. And I don't care how thoughtful he wants to pretend he is with the tone of voice that he uses. He is a fringe character, and it's dangerous. This kind of thinking is dangerous. When you tell people, particularly vulnerable people, that when they interact with a cop, it's inherently dangerous because cops are inherently racist and evil bigots who are going to murder you, understand that that person who interacts with that cop, they're going to go into it a little bit anxious, a little bit fearful, maybe a little bit aggressive. And then, unfortunately, a cop might end up having to use some kind of force because the person that they're interacting with has been told, has been programmed to believe that that cop is a bad guy. That's dangerous. This thinking is disgusting. 1-800-465-8777 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM of the Greater East Side. As kids are dying on the streets in King County thanks to a rather permissive drug policy here, over in Snohomish County, the prosecutor, Adam Cornell, just took another step closer to ditching their dangerous policy. It's almost the same as here in King County that allows people to carry up to 2 grams of an illegal substance without any fear of being charged. Joining me on the line to discuss is our friend Nate Nearing. He's Snohomish County Council Member. Councilmember, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jason.
So we've talked about this before, but since we last chatted, can you just give us an update on how this policy has been impacting the county?
Yeah, sure. So Adam Cornell's predecessor, Mark Rowe, who's the previous prosecuting attorney, made a decision to not prosecute 2 grams or less. So I think similar to what you're seeing in Seattle. And so with that decision, there's, I think on the streets, this mentality that, there's not a fear or people can carry these drugs and not have to worry about being arrested or about accountability. And so it's created an environment where it's accepted in the community. And I think that we need to get away from that and take a little bit of a tougher stance on these sorts of crimes.
Yeah, because, you know, we had 4 teens in this area die recently from taking counterfeit oxycodone. It was laced with fentanyl. Mm. And I would argue that these policies, they don't just mean that more drug dealers are going to feel empowered to do it, but it changes the drug culture so that maybe a kid feels like, oh, I'm probably, even if I were to get caught buying, I'm not going to suffer any real consequences. And that's dangerous.
Exactly. I think as a society or as a culture, we need to change the conversation about that and ensure that, like you mentioned, for our kids, that we're being very clear about what our standards are.
So Adam Cornell comes up, says, look, I need more funding for staff members in my office so I can get rid of this policy. What's your reaction to that argument?
Well, I think it's a good idea to reverse the policy and to start taking these 2 gram or less cases more seriously. We did have the opportunity just this week to hear the prosecuting attorney's budget presentation. Mm-hmm. And so he outlined his vision for handling these cases through a diversion process. And I think that's good. I think diversion programs are important. I want to make sure as a county that we're not losing sight of the need to hold people accountable for their actions. And so we've talked before about, you know, the law enforcement embedded social worker program that exists in my district. And that's had some great early success. But I think the reason that program has been so successful and has the public support that it does is because it offers a path toward treatment and a healthier lifestyle for those who are homeless and drug addicted. But there's also a very clear standard set to where if someone rejects treatment, rejects the diversion, then they're sent to jail and their outstanding warrants are prosecuted. So there's some very clear accountability there. And I think that really differentiates what we're doing from Seattle, mm-hmm. where, you know, they seem to just be throwing so much money at the issue. I've heard that it's enough to pay each person who's homeless over $100,000 per year. And it doesn't seem to be making a dent. It's a complete disaster. So I think it's critical we do better. And I think we're on the right track in Snohomish County. I think there's a couple questions. The first is about the policy and then another is about staffing. So completely supportive of the policy change, think that we need to be taking it more seriously. With the staffing, I think, you know, we've had several diversion-related requests throughout this budget process. This is one from the prosecuting attorney's office asking for another prosecutor and an assistant. We've also had some from our district court who want to implement a community court process, another diversion idea. I think these are all valuable ideas and they have merit. But rather than do what Seattle does and just continually dump taxpayer dollars at new programs, what I'd like to see is the law and justice community come together. Mm-hmm. I mean, the sheriff, the prosecuting attorney, the courts come together, get on the same page about how we're going to move forward and address these cases in a unified manner. And I think that needs to include a path for diversion, like is being talked about, but also it must include a path for holding people accountable who aren't willing to go down the route of getting treatment.
Just joining me, we're talking with Snohomish County Councilmember Nate Nearing about the move to get rid of this 2 grams policy, where if you're caught in Snohomish County with 2 grams or less of heroin, meth, oxycodone, you don't end up getting prosecuted, which has led to more people dealing drugs and more people buying drugs. Do you think that you have to do the extra staffing in order to get rid of the policy, or in your mind, can you do one of those? Meaning, can you just get rid of the policy?
Well, I'm not clear on that. I'm open to to kind of follow the evidence where it leads. You know, we've just started our budget process this week with our presentations. And so I'm hearing, you know, from one side that the staffing is required in order to make a change. And I'm interested in looking at the information there. I'm hearing from other sides that it could be that it could be potentially be done without that, and so I want to make sure to take all these different things into consideration, keep an open mind, and ultimately make the best decision. I think in order to make the best decision, though, we need to make sure that we're having everybody on the same page. I think what we're missing right now in Snohomish County, and this probably could go for any county jurisdiction where we have lots of independently elected officials, is we need to have everybody at the same table. We need to have the sheriff, the prosecuting attorney, the public defenders, the courts. Everyone needs to be talking to each other so that we can get on the same page for how we want to address these issues. We've got a very limited amount of resources. We want to make sure that we're being responsible with taxpayer dollars, not just dumping a bunch of taxpayer dollars into every new idea. So I think in order to be as responsible and as good stewards as we can of those tax dollars, we need to come together and decide what's the best way to use those limited resources.
Yeah, and I think like the subtext of this entire conversation has to be about the fact that there are limited resources, right? I mean, when you're looking countywide, we had Russell Weta on the show last week. He is a Sultan council member. He's running for mayor. Later today, we're talking with Monroe Mayor Jeffrey Thomas. Like, Everett can maybe afford to deal with some of these problems that a policy like this would cause. But when you're talking about Sultan and Monroe or Gold Bar, Oso, Darrington, like, these are smaller communities that don't have those kinds of budgets. And that's what they're dealing with.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think one of the keys to point out here is that really shows, especially on the issue of homelessness and drug abuse, is the importance of partnerships between communities. I think going back to the embedded social worker program, you see that with Marysville and Arlington and Snohomish County, where we're pooling resources to make that a success. And I think other smaller communities like the ones you've mentioned have done a great job of that and can continue to do that. But in order to address this issue, we can't just have one-off things, you know, in various communities that are just pushing the problem elsewhere. We really need to come together as a county and as a region and say, look, we need to set a clear standard for wanting to get our communities cleaned up, wanting to get people help, but also make sure that we're holding people accountable. And until we all get on the same page on that, I think it's going to be difficult to really move the needle on this.
Now, at the same time, obviously, and last question, this is tied directly to homelessness, that you cannot separate the two issues out as much as some people would like. Next week, there's a homelessness panel that we're both involved in.
Yeah, definitely. So next Tuesday, October 15th, there's going to be a panel on homelessness at Foster Garvey in Seattle that I'm really excited that you'll be on there, Jason. And then Pierce County Executive Bruce Dammeyer will be there, and Marysville Mayor John Nearing will be there as well as former King County Councilwoman Louise Miller. And so that'll be at noon on Tuesday next week. And we're really excited to have a greater conversation on homelessness, kind of what's going on in other areas of the Puget Sound, and maybe the differences between some success stories and then what we're seeing in Seattle, where there hasn't been a whole lot of progress.
Yeah, and this, again, is about pooling resources, in this case, information. So a whole bunch of people who have different takes on this from different parts of Western Washington all getting together. The event is absolutely free. Again, it's Tuesday at noon. If you want to RSVP, text the keyword event to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll go ahead and send you the information. Text EVENT to 1-800-465-8770. We've been talking with Snohomish County Council member Nate Nearing. Nate, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. Always enjoy being on your show.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Again, text the keyword EVENT to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. I know I have something on the schedule that has me yelling at Joy Behar. Would it be okay, Producer Peyton, if I do a slightly different story? Because it just came across my Twitter feed and I cannot ignore it.
I'll allow it.
Is that cool?
I'll allow it.
Well, yeah. Well, let's try this again and tell me no. Hold on. Can I go off the script?
No.
Who's the show host? You or me? Exactly. Go. Punish yourself.
So, wait, do you want me to allow it or do you want me to deny it? I have the power
here. Well, I don't know. I'm just saying.
I have the power
here. The way you offered permission made it sound like it wasn't a bit.
Then don't ask. Okay. Don't ask.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. This is outrageous. There's a story right now in Vox, Vox.com. And it's one of those stories that's phrased in the worst possible way. And it got my friend Dave Rubin, who is a podcaster, videocaster, tweeting out, I need to give Vox more credit. It manages to always get worse than it is. That's a real skill. Perfect way to talk about this. This is the tweet and article that Vox.com just put out. It says 26 states impose criminal penalties for knowingly exposing someone to HIV, but these laws make people with the virus vulnerable to stigma and abuse. So the way it's phrased makes it sound like you're okay that people are knowingly infecting someone with HIV. That's how that tweet sounds. In fact, that's the goal of this tweet. Because they want to get rid of the stigma of living with HIV, which is a very, very noble cause. But because they are extremists, they want to pretend that calling someone out for purposefully giving someone HIV is somehow not worth attacking because we don't want to make people who are unconnected to these stories whatsoever feel bad. Sorry, no. We should not be ever. We should never, ever, ever be unwilling to call out dangerous, deadly criminal behavior. I do not want anyone living with HIV to feel stigma or abuse unless they're breaking the law and weaponizing their status. I know people with HIV. I consider them very close friends. I don't want them feeling bad because of their disease. Thankfully, living with HIV in 2019 is much different than what it was in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. Every year, it gets much easier, not easy, but easier to live with this disease. It once was an immediate death sentence. Now you can live an otherwise healthy life when you follow the instructions of your doctors. However, this has nothing to do with stigma. You are a criminal if you knowingly infect someone, if you knowingly expose HIV to someone. You're a criminal. I'm upset that it's only 26 states imposing criminal penalties. No one wants to have HIV. And when we get to the place in society where we're giving a pass to people who are knowingly exposing someone to HIV because you want to fight stigma, that's a dangerous place to be. And I don't want to downplay the seriousness of having HIV. Yes, it's easier than what it once was, but it's not easy. And we have to be able to separate out the stigma associated with someone who is living with HIV versus someone who is knowingly exposing. This is disgusting. Vox.com should be absolutely ashamed. But of course they're not. They're framing this as if the criminals are the victims. In fact, on the story, there's a image with individuals holding up a sign that says the AIDS crisis is not over. That message has a serious disconnect to the topic of this story. They say advocates say they may actually worsen the spread of the virus, having laws on the books that punish people for knowingly exposing someone to HIV. What world are we living in? I ask that question. I legitimately don't understand this kind of insane thinking. I don't. We have to be reasonable while also respecting the feelings of individuals who are disconnected from any of this, right? Are we not capable of doing that? Do we have to treat everyone the exact same way when it comes to someone who's not a criminal and someone who is in our judgments of them and of their actions? I'm certainly compassionate and sympathetic to folks who are dealing with HIV. And again, I don't want them to feel bad. I don't want society to look at them and say that they're dirty, that they're unwilling of respect. But isn't that a completely separate conversation from someone who criminally exposes someone else? Why is that not an exception to progressives? I legitimately don't understand. And I've never really heard a direct connection other than They like to say, and I suppose they're consistent, because I was going to do a story earlier on today until I realized that the date was off, so it was an older story. And that's weirdly why I vaguely remembered the story as I was reading the piece. There was an illegal immigrant who was in this state who murdered a teenager. Okay? He was a gang member, and he murdered a rival gang member. And ICE had put out a detainer request because they knew about this guy and they wanted to deport him. But the police did not honor that because of our county sanctuary law at the time. Now it's a state law. The left treats someone who's in this country illegally, who's not committing any crime, who was brought here, for example, as a kid, who's an important member of their community. They're making good lives for themselves and others. They treat that person exactly the same as the person who's here illegally and commits a murder or a rape or a kidnapping. Because they, in their minds, for some reason, and again, I don't understand this reason, and I would love for someone to try to explain it to me, they can't separate out both sides. Now, maybe it's that they think society will confuse one side with the other. I don't hold such a sort of grim or dim view of society. I think the average person could differentiate between bad elements and good elements. That's what I believe. That's what I believe. I don't need a medal for believing that. I think that's just common sense. They can't separate these two things out when it comes to HIV. That is so disturbing and shocking to me. And the dangerous part about this is it could normalize knowingly infecting other people. This is insane. This is delusional. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Especially if you're someone who's maybe in that camp that I'm talking about. Explain your position to me. I would love to hear it. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH.